Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome to Sunday School Dropouts, the podcast where an ex-Christian and a non-believing sort of Jew read all the way through the Bible for the first time, except we finished it and now we're doing Bible stories that aren't actually in the Bible. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Nico.
And let's get biblical.
You got it.
First thing that you need to know when you're listening to this podcast is it's not a Christian Bible study podcast and you cannot let your children listen to it.
Well, you can, but will we judge you? Yes.
But will God judge you? Yes, also. I am the ex-Christian. I was raised Presbyterian. I'm now an atheist.
And I'm the non-believing sort of Jew.
And we have a third person in the studio today, the first guest of season three. He's a comedian, writer, and former member of the Spice Girls, Ryan Houlihan. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, Ryan.
Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure.
As we ask all of our guests, I will ask you, what is your religious background?
So when I was growing up, we weren't very religious. Mm-hmm. We kind of floated around and did like Christmas, and like occasionally there would be answers of like, "Well, God did that," and it was like, "Okay." And then 9/11 happened, and my dad was like, "We have to get really religious because like if we pray more, there won't be any more 9/11s." Was like what he was thinking. And then
makes sense.
Yeah, we got really into Catholicism. And I had gone to a private Catholic school for 2 years growing up because we had lived in an area that my parents didn't really like the school system. And then when we moved, I didn't really have a basis of understanding. So then when we got super into Catholicism, it was like a lot at once.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of years into us going to this church in my neighborhood, the whole Catholic church scandally stuff came out, and our priest
scandally
was,
stuff.
Right. was involved in that
scandal-ish.
Oh, no, your priest was involved in the scandally stuff.
The scandally, you know, the doodly dudes, the things that went down. Our priest ate boys for breakfast, lunch, and dinner apparently, and I had joined the altar boys like that year, and I was like a month in. So then when all that went down, we like stopped going to church. But there's also the fact that
then you're just inviting 9/11s.
Yeah. Then there's going to be so many 9/11s.
Stop.
No, he did. In reaction to 9/11, I don't know if it was a genuine religious like awakening for him, or if he just felt like we have to get really conservative or buttoned up or engage with the community more. I really haven't talked to him in depth about it, but we did just end up going a lot. And on my mom's side, they're Catholic as well, but there was always like a vague Judaism rumor. Like we were the Elizabeth
sure.
Warren of
mm-hmm.
Jews.
Oh my God.
And so when I got older, I took a world like religions class, and I currently identify as like a functional atheist. Like in all ways, I feel pretty atheist. I think if we drill down into my religious views at the moment, I converted to Judaism formally. I became like a Reformed Jew when I was slightly older, even though I had sort of, I grew up on Long Island and all of my friends were Jews, and we had this vague, we are Jewish thing floating around on my mom's side. And then when I did my formal conversion, I really did that because I really liked I was doing volunteer work with a synagogue, and I really, really liked the community there. And I really liked the sort of philosophy and the like community and sense of tradition. But what I love about Reform Judaism is that it is a set of like traditions and philosophy and stuff that isn't necessarily, you can divorce it. Like the whole point is that you can argue and you can back mm-hmm. up what you're saying. And I was very attracted to that. You could functionally say you do not believe all of these stories are wonderful or horrible legends, depending on the legend. And like, you can then still be part of the community. Nobody, there's no value judgment attached to that in Reformed Judaism. And so for me, like, do I think like the world is infinitely more complicated and that eventually science will find out that this is all a virtual reality simulation, or that like there is a, it's all being run on a computer, or that there's thousands of multiverses and beings that are organized that exist outside of it? Sure, maybe, I don't know. Let's argue about it. I think there's a lot of stuff you could do. There's a lot of reasons to be ethical that aren't a point system like The Good Place. There's a lot of like, and so
great point system works super well.
Yeah, no, that's working out great for Kristen Bell. But I think like at the moment I engage with Judaism in a way that I think is really healthy for me. And that is how I identify. But, and I love having big sort of metaphysical discussions that we'll never have evidence or answers for. I think that's fun. But I'm highly suspicious and skeptical of how that easily gets exploited. I wrote a piece for The Outline about Tyler Henry, the Hollywood medium, just talking about how you can easily exploit people at their most vulnerable through claims like that. So I consider myself like a skeptic and stuff. I consider myself a Jew, but I have such a basis in Christianity and I've had such a weird experience with it that I feel informed on the topic, and I feel like I'm an informed skeptic on the topic. But yeah, that's where I'm at.
Right.
And then when I was in the Spice Girls, no, I'm kidding.
They really frown upon religion.
I mean, they said I should be a Scientologist, so.
No, that's true about the Spice Girls, though.
So, our topic for today, since we have finished the Bible and we are moving on to things that seem like they should be in the Bible but aren't, today we're talking about Lilith. And Ryan, we met you at a party where you said you stan Lilith.
I stan Lilith.
So we're going to get into what precisely you stan and whether Lilith is a problematic fave. Mm-hmm.
We will decide by the end of the show whether or not she is canceled.
So before doing any research for this episode,
you took two stiff drinks.
I mean, that's also true. But my general understanding of Lilith, which I think most people will share, most listeners will share, is like, she was Adam's first wife before Eve, and she was either evil or just too independent or disobedient, and then she was replaced by Eve.
I picture her doing a lot of like hair whips around the Garden of
Yes.
Eden, just being like, I don't care.
Now I've done several researches mm-hmm. about Lilith. And before I go any further, I want to recommend this book, Tree of Souls, by Howard Schwartz. This is my main source for today's episode. Really amazing resource, huge book of Jewish mythology, and it's got like the myth that it's talking about, and then an explanation, and then all the sources. So there's stuff from the Talmud, there's stuff from Midrashim, rabbinical writings, like stuff from Kabbalah, and he's gathered it all into this one really amazing book with explanation of it. So that's where most of my information comes from.
Mm. So I went back to my favorite source, the Jewish Encyclopedia of 1906, online, unedited in its entirety.
Amazing.
So it's somewhat problematic in and of itself, because obviously it doesn't include anything discovered after 1906. And some of the thought is a little old-fashioned. However, it is meticulously cited. Anyway.
That is one thing you can depend on Jews for.
I
is
love
meticulous
it, right?
citations
it's
and
great.
Constant like corrections.
But do you want to talk about how Lilith was Lilith before the stories happened?
Sure. Well, there's one mention of Lilith in the canonical Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a character per se. It's mentioned in Isaiah. He's talking about a country being destroyed, and he's describing the wasteland that it will become after it is destroyed. And it's going to be full of jackals, and it's going to be full of, you know, bats, whatever, and it says, there Lilith shall repose. In the NIV, it translates that as night creature.
That's right. And the famous KJV translation is screech owl.
Screech owl. There's a lot of other owls in the passage. The owls were very scary, apparently, to
Do you want to hear some other translations that
yes,
were used?
Yes, please.
Night owl, night specter, night monster, vampires.
Nice.
The night hag, of course. Night jar. That's confusing.
That's a bird.
Is that true?
Type of bird, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. And night bird, of course.
And this plays on the etymology that I had always heard of Lilith, which is, so the Hebrew word for night is Lila. Mm-hmm. And if you make it into a feminine adjective, it's Lilith, mm-hmm. which is anglicized as Lilith. However, apparently, that's not necessarily the etymology. That's not necessarily correct, because it is likely that the Jewish character of Lilith was adapted from the Babylonian night demon Lilitu, who, I mean, Babylonian, that was probably a pretty similar language. It may come from the Babylonian word for night. I don't
right.
know.
Actually, the language was called Akkadian.
I'm sorry, Akkadian.
But that's what they spoke in Babylon at the time of the exile in Babylon. And they had these spirits, these three spirits, Lilitu, and like Arsan Lilitu.
Okay.
And they were like three versions of this same evil demon thing.
And Isaiah is basically saying, well, whoever worships idols, I'll give you an idol to worship. It's a Babylonian night demon.
And he didn't explain it in the text. Isaiah didn't. I say this as if Isaiah were, you know, had a byline on him. And it's named after him, but whatever. Anyway, yeah. He doesn't explain it, meaning his audience probably knew who Lilith was at that point. Or at least
right.
well enough to know that they should be scared of Lilith.
So there's one big famous story mm-hmm. about Lilith, which is, I think, the one that most of the, like, if you ask just the average Joe on the street about mm-hmm. Lilith, there's like this one big famous story. First, there are a couple versions of the creation story that are from outside the Bible, which makes sense to me, because if one myth is going to vary by like culture, like the creation myth seems like.
Because it's universal. Everybody yeah, has an idea everybody about has where the world to, comes yeah. from, right?
So there's a couple where there's like a first Eve and a second Eve, but the first one isn't Lilith. There's one, my favorite that I read about was the first Eve. God created her in front of Adam and like, so like created a skeleton and then put muscles on it and then put skin on it. And Adam was grossed out
yeah,
and
God,
wouldn't marry her.
Trigger warning, God. That is.
So interestingly, there are two versions of the creation story in Genesis, of course.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Slightly different. Yeah.
Very slightly different. But those slight differences are what basically create the space for this kind of talk about there being a first Eve, because in the first version, man and woman are created from dirt at the same time. And in the second version, man is created, then the animals, then the plants. And then once God sees that there is no proper servant for man on earth, he
takes out the rib,
puts Adam to sleep, takes the rib out, and makes Eve.
Do you know that's one of the only creation stories in the entire world where a man comes first?
Is that true?
Yeah.
I mean,
usually
well,
the woman comes
sense,
first
right?
and
yeah.
has to give birth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. Later on, rabbis in the Second Temple period and after looked at those two stories and tried to reconcile them somehow.
Right.
Especially because in the second version of the story, you could interpret the language to say that Adam is saying, this time you have created me a helpmeet, indicating that there was a first time. So then they were like, okay, there must have been a first woman that wasn't satisfactory in some way.
So let's conjecture about that.
Right. And into that space creeps a folktale.
yes. And so the...
Into that space creeps a demon.
A night demon. The big famous version is from this midrash from like medieval times.
Yeah, I think calling it a midrash is even a little bit much.
It's controversial.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of strange writing mm-hmm. by a rabbi from medieval times, and it's called the Alphabet of Ben Sira. And we read slightly different translations of this. Do you wanna run it down for us, Nico?
You got it. So there's a thing called the Alphabet of Ben Sira or Ben Sirach.
Okay.
It's structured like a midrash in that there are two...
Midrash in general is like rabbinical commentary.
Yeah. Religious writing, sort of.
Like, by a rabbi.
Like scrawling on the side of the books.
Often scrawling
yeah.
on the side
like
of the
books. Like very literally often. Yeah. yeah.
In this one, there are 22 Aramaic proverbs and then a discussion of each one. Scholarly research of the current day indicates that many of these are not actually Aramaic proverbs.
What, this guy was just making them up?
Some of them are Arabic proverbs, for example.
Whoa.
Or like a bunch of them don't have any reference in Talmud. And this is probably around 800 to 1000 CE.
But well, then, politically correct.
Thank you.
PC gone mad, yes. Calling it CE.
I am a PC.
In this house, we call it Anno Domini.
That's right. But then there's the second half, which is much more famous. The first half is like pretty straightforward, and in fact is well thought of almost in some circles for its wit and the way it.
That's what I aspire to be. Well thought of almost in some circles.
Well, it's 1,000 years old. The second half is the famous half. So in this one, there are 22 Hebrew proverbs.
Okay.
And 22 because that's the number of letters in the Hebrew language.
Hebrew alphabet, yeah.
There we go. Language is a part of an alphabet. And please don't ask me any questions.
I will not be taking questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome to my TED Talk.
Yeah. In the second half, like I said, there are 22 proverbs. But it's mostly an excuse to tell this fantastical story about a character named Ben-Sira. Ben-Sira is the son of Jeremiah, the prophet Jeremiah. He's actually the incestuous son of Jeremiah with his daughter.
Oh.
Huh.
That's not in the Bible.
Not in the Bible.
That was not in the book of Jeremiah. We read Jeremiah. There was loincloths being buried in the riverbanks. Mm-hmm. There was no incest.
This part didn't make it in. And the whole thing is saucy AF. It's full of, let's face it, lewd language.
Wow.
Adult situations.
Whoa.
And mildly blasphemous stuff.
What is this, HBO?
I wish. I know it's not TV, so I can see how you're confused. But it's also not HBO. It's in the third category of things that is neither TV nor HBO.
Wow. No interest.
I agree. But so basically, this Ben-Sira fellow is ascribed a lot of magical characteristics. He's called, in fact, Jesus Ben-Sira in the text.
Oh.
A lot of the stuff recycles some of the Apocrypha that we actually read on the New Testament,
mm-hmm.
like magical stories about Jesus when he was young. For mm-hmm. example, in the story, Ben-Sira comes out of the womb with hair and teeth and is already a learned rabbi and disputes
cool.
disputes the teachings that are being told to him in the crib. And he's so wise as such a young child and so amazing that Nebuchadnezzar II calls for this wise baby to come before him and give him advice.
How many people does he kill with his mind powers is the question.
That's yeah. a really good question because okay. Jesus definitely killed people with his mind powers.
I'm picturing Jack from The Incredibles and then someone being like, get me that wise baby.
Yeah, except a rabbi. Jack as a rabbi.
Also a rabbi.
Anyway, this is all an excuse to have Ben-Sira tell a bunch of like basically animal fables or folk tales.
Just fun, colorful, snappy folk tales.
Right, that are all structured around these proverbs, sort of. Not really, though. And there's some real goofy ones. There are some that are stolen from Indian texts, like from India.
Whoa.
There's one about like a lion and a tortoise that's stolen directly from an Indian text. There are some that repurpose like early Christian myths, like about Jesus, basically. And then there's Lilith.
There's Lilith. Our story with Lilith starts off in the Garden of Eden. God creates Adam and Lilith, both from Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Important detail.
It is.
So it's like the first story in Genesis.
That's right.
Creation. Immediately, they start fighting about who's going to be on top during sex.
Hi, it's nice to meet you. I mean, is this Grindr?
I know, right? Who has that conversation the first thing?
Well, I mean...
Yes, yeah.
I mean...
You can answer.
I mean, if it was the only other person in the world, I wouldn't have... That's not how I would start a conversation. But if it's like a weird Thursday...
Adam thinks he should be on top because he's dominant.
Mm-hmm.
And Lilith thinks she should be on top because they're equal. They were both made from Earth, and they're both equal. And here's the quote from my translation by Howard Schwartz. When Lilith saw that they would never agree, she uttered God's name and flew into the air.
Because speaking the Tetragrammaton gives you magic powers.
Yes. And so she fucks off to a cave by the Red Sea.
Flying above the Red Sea, depending on how you want to read it.
Okay. And God sends three angels to go retrieve her. And they're named Sinoy, Sansanoy, and Simangaloff.
Mm-hmm. Classic angel names.
Weird
right there.
Angel names. And they tell her, you know, you have to go back and be with your husband or we'll like drown you or we'll kill 100 of your demon children every day. Apparently she had begun having hundreds of demon children every day.
And well, listen, if you're gonna fly off into the sky above the Red Sea, might as well start having demon children.
Confusingly, that part has Talmudic precedent, because in the Talmud, one of the only times it mentions Lilith is that basically between the birth of Seth and the birth of
Cain and Abel. Cain and Abel go first. Seth is after.
Right. Thank you. This is why she's here. She's a fucking pro. Okay. Anyway,
they don't have a catchy Brady Bunch song to see. So
that would be helpful.
The place.
You know what? I bet there's a bunch of Sunday schools. That
yeah,
do
no, there
have
are. There probably. Yeah.
Anyway, there was 130 years between those two, but during that time in the Talmud, in one interpretation of it, Adam was alone. Adam was
he
awake.
Like left Eve?
Yeah.
Because of her sinfulness.
Right, and so
the
he was sleeping alone, meaning he was having, let's face it,
demonic sex.
Not nocturnal emissions. Okay. And his wet dreams, apparently in the Talmud, wet dreams give birth to demons.
Yes. We'll get into this more later.
Okay. I didn't know we were going to, but.
Yeah. Oh, I have a lot of notes about this. Cool. But so there is a thing in the Talmud where like Adam is separated from Eve because of his like grief. Mm-hmm. And then Lilith kind of seduces him and has 100 demon children per night or whatever. Or more than that.
Anyway, so that feeds back into this alphabet version.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, she's in her cave. These angels are threatening her. And she says, I won't leave. I'm staying here. And furthermore, for some reason, I declare that I have the power to kill newborn infants.
That's right. That's her negotiating position.
Boys before the 8th day and girls before the 20th day.
Right. Which is biblical.
But if I ever see the names of angels, you three angels, on an amulet, then I won't have the power to kill that infant. And so that's, for some reason, the deal they strike. She gets to strangle infants and not go back to Adam. They get to kill 100 of her demon children every day, and their names on an amulet.
Well, you know what it's really about? It's about
powerful.
It's about those zids, baby, about the residuals on the amulets. You think they're not? Those angels aren't getting some of the back end? This is pay to play, okay?
So apparently there's a Jewish tradition of like putting an amulet over your child's crib or like carving stuff into the child's like bedpost.
The other big one is bowls.
Bowls?
Yeah,
protective
bowls.
So in Mesopotamia, in like 400 to 600 CE, they found one of these bowls. This is in the period of the Sassanid Empire, just to be clear.
Whoa. Sounds sassy.
It's extremely sassy. They found these protective bowls buried in the floor of like every Jewish house, buried upside down to capture the demons. And one of the most commonly protected against demons was Lilith.
Yes. And so there's like, you have to write it in the correct, there's like a spell you have to write. The short version is just like Lilith Abi, which is just go away Lilith or whatever.
And she's like, I was going to come kill these babies, but you got this bowl. So
yeah, this
all
bowl,
right.
I'm not into it. And then the angel's names just.
She's like, I know them. All right. Yeah. You got me.
We made this nonsensical deal.
I have the prayer here from a famous example of these. One of these bowls that is very well preserved. It also has a hilarious illustration of what the bowl maker's idea of Lilith looks like, which is a very goofy like cartoon owl.
Oh,
it's like it's pretty cute,
like those branded cereal bowls from the 90s that have like cartoon characters on it.
Totally,
it like...
except around the edge, it has written.
There's a spell to repel.
It doesn't say snap crackle pop. It says,
"It says thou Lilith's male Lily and female Lilith, hag and ghoul. I adjure you by the strong one of Abraham, by the rock of Isaac, by the Shaddai of Jacob, by Yah Hashem, by Yah his memorial, to turn away from this Rashnoi Ben something and Gayanoi." Ben something, her husband. Here is your divorce and writ and letter of separation sent through holy angels. Amen, amen, Selah, hallelujah.
Nice. I like they threw
she won't
in
be coming here tonight.
They threw in all the Like every holy word they could
every
think
magic
of.
Word that they knew.
Hallelujah, whatever.
You gotta put them on the bowl.
Well, listen, if I've had the times I've had pests in my house, you just buy whatever's on the shelf and you dump it everywhere. That's right. I get it.
And maybe you wouldn't if you know, like, unfortunately in New York, very few landlords are okay with you burying magical protective bowls in the floor.
It's like you gotta do the little filter when you go to Zillow or whatever.
That's right.
Say, I need a magical, like, burying
pets,
bowl.
Pets okay, bowls okay.
Demonic protection allowed.
Yeah.
You're like, whoa, phew. What's rent control like?
But so what stands out to me is that these angels don't sound like they don't have regular angel names. Normally angels have a name like Raphael, Gabriel, like they all end in L, which means like of God. And then these dudes are Sanoi, Sansanoi, and Samangoloth. It doesn't even sound like it's in Hebrew.
Mm-mm.
And I wonder if Lilith was imported from Babylonian mythology.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if these dudes are imported from there too.
They could have been imported from anywhere, honestly. They could be like, you know, transplants from local Spanish mythology. We don't really know where this second half of the alphabet was written.
And so it seems kind of like maybe there's this folk ritual about the amulets.
Mm-hmm. And bowls.
Yeah, and bowls. And it also, you can tie a red string.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes that. But that seems like a pretty important ritual if you live in a time when you don't know about science. Mm-hmm. And like protecting a newborn baby, like
top priority.
You're
just gonna
top priority.
Throw all the hallelujahs you have.
Right.
And I wonder if...
Just pack that shit full of amulets.
If they kind of, like, had that tradition and needed to somehow connect it to the Bible in order to justify the tradition.
I think that's very close to the truth.
Even though it may come from Babylon.
I wouldn't be surprised if the author himself was a maker of fine amulets.
Yeah. Yeah.
What also strikes me is that, so I've read several Lilith folktales now,
mm-hmm.
and most of them have nothing to do with Adam.
Mm.
So it seems like maybe they kind of duct tape this together in order to...
Well, that's the thing, is that there's this, like, this vacuum is created for a first wife because of a difference in the way a story was told twice. And then you think of, okay, well, there was somebody. Then you've got these Lilith stories and, you know, she goes back real far too. And then you just, through conversation, start smushing those things together. And it really feels like, I mean, you even have the thing with Lilith being three forms of the same, like, woman,
mm-hmm.
which is a recurring theme with, like, witches, hags, demons, like,
sure,
it's always
changing
three
shape
ladies.
And stuff,
yeah. And I think probably you have this lady night demon, and you keep, she's being talked about all the time, and you have this, like, horrible, you know, slut that wanted to be on top, and then you
gross,
yeah, and then you just kind of, like, push those together, and then you're like, oh, that, you know, that Lilith, that, like, and it just becomes this, like, figure. And then once you have that, it's easy to start attaching other things to it. So you've got this amulet for babies, you're like, well, gets rid of baby eating Lilith.
And, like, these amulets, you know, they're not mentioned in the Torah, but if we retcon this, like, myth into it, then yeah, this, we have a great proof that this amulet works according to the Torah, according to God. Let's keep doing it.
Right. We have so much more weird stuff to talk about, but we're going to take a quick break. You're going to hear some music, and we'll be back in a couple minutes with more Lilith, more Ryan, more Lauren, and a little bit more of me, too. See you in a second. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Sunday School Dropouts. I'm Nico.
I'm Lauren.
And we're here with Ryan.
Hello.
Hello.
Question mark, question mark. And we're talking about Lilith. I have a bunch of Lilith stories. Can I throw them at you both and get your reaction?
Oh, yeah. Hard and fast.
We'll try.
Okay. So in the Zohar, which is like the main text of Kabbalah, mm-hmm. aka like esoteric mystical Judaism.
From about the 13th century, probably written in Spain.
Yeah, maybe. Who could say?
Yeah, that I've heard that of Adam Sandler movie.
That's right.
Yeah.
So in Kabbalah, Lilith is basically a succubus.
Mm.
She roams around at night and seduces men while they're sleeping. And same. So if you if you ever have a wet dream, that's Lilith.
Hmm.
And she then gives birth to these half-human, half-demons who are doomed to be outcasts because humans won't like them because they're half demon, but demons won't like them because they're half human.
Right. That's like Angel or something.
Yeah. I was going to say this is very Charmed.
Yeah.
It's like a hard, it's like an immigrant story or like, you know, like
bicultural. Or like Blade. Like Blade, guys.
In one story, not in the Zohar, she poses as like a like parishioner who's seeking counsel from a rabbi.
Mm.
And she's like...
Sounds like a rabbi's kink right there.
Please come over to my house and
And this wasn't and the baby rabbi?
This, no, but it the story does take pains to say that he was very young.
Oh, maybe this is the baby rabbi.
And when he gets there to help her with her spiritual afflictions,
mm-hmm.
she drops her robe and she's like, let's fucking do it right now.
This is the original I have a problem with my plumbing
story. Yes, right. Yes, exactly. And he's like,
I have a spiritual affliction, rabbi. We all know what that means.
Wink, wink.
And it says that he like wrestled with his temptation like Jacob wrestling with God.
That sounds hot.
Yeah.
But of course he triumphs, he resists the temptation, and he says, no, we will not fucking do it right now. Mm-hmm. And then the house disappears. And then there's just glowworms at his feet, which I guess Lilith has returned to her glowworm form or something.
Naturally.
Good to know.
That was all an illusion just to seduce him into sin. There was also Howard Schwartz, the author, noted that like, so the Torah says like not to sleep with another man's wife,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't actually say anything about sleeping with an unmarried woman.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a minor sin.
Right. Although in the Zohar, Lilith is married to Asmodeus, the king of the demons.
Hmm. Yes. That's
and one of the reasons that she got like canned the first time from her position as Adam's wife is for sleeping with Samael, the fallen angel.
That is another, there's a whole cluster of stories where she has nothing to do with Adam and she's just in hell. She's a demon. She's usually depicted as human from the waist up, a beautiful woman from the waist up, but flame from the waist down.
Dope.
And she's like married to Samael, or she's married to, what did you call him? Asmodeus. Ashmedai is the Hebrew version.
Mm.
And they're always fighting over her, and sometimes one of them is married to her daughter, and they're all fighting over each other, and blah, blah, blah. There's, like, several variations on that.
See, there was skepticism earlier that you could stand Lilith, but this is a fire mermaid
mermaid.
Who dates multiple demon kings, like the Real Housewives of Hell.
A poly fire mermaid.
And I can't see how you don't stand that.
The other thing, in addition to wet dreams, of course, is that when you masturbate as a man and you spill your seed, which we know is forbidden due to the story of Onan.
Yeah, the sin of Onan.
In Genesis. She will take the results of your masturbation, and she only needs a drop. And then she will impregnate herself and have demon children, and she'll become your secret wife.
Wow.
Oh.
And
she needs a hobby.
Right. Maybe this is her hobby.
Listen, I'm not shaming anybody. I'm saying work through this with a therapist.
So then, you know, it's like, just ask, there's, you know, like specific folktales about, you know, ask poor Menachem. What happened to him is he was masturbating every day and it became this huge problem for him.
Oh, Menachem.
One time he left like the Seder dinner to go masturbate in the basement.
Look.
And because of that, Lilith was his secret wife and they had like a million demon children. And when he died, His demon children were all swarming around his bed asking for their inheritance, but no one else could see them.
Of course.
And then, like, the rabbis are like, oh, yes, this house is very haunted by demons. And then
not a bowl in sight. Can you believe it?
They have a
Menachem the Fool, they call them.
A construction worker goes to, like, break open the basement so that the rabbis can access it, and he dies because all the demons kill him.
Fuck.
So, thanks to the fucking jacking off basement,
you know what?
A man lost his life.
I would say, if it's a choice, kind of worth it.
I mean, it sounds like all of the consequences were inherited by people he didn't know or care about.
Yeah, Menachem didn't care.
Yeah.
And so then apparently there was a tradition in the 1600s in some Jewish communities where when a man died, his sons would have to, like, part of the funeral is, like, the sons take an indirect route to the cemetery so that the presumptive demon sons don't know the way. And then when you get there, the sons have to, like, say, they have to recite Psalm 91, and they have to dance around their father's body 7 times so that the demon sons won't ask for their inheritance, which I feel like is just, I hate that. I hate your dad's funeral. You're like, a main thing of your dad's funeral is like, well, he probably jacked off at some point.
I like that all of death is now like, well, how long was he alive? We gotta sing twice a day.
Rabbi,
dad was a real
how many times should I dance? How many times did my father spill his seed, Rabbi?
Guy's not even cold yet.
So, yeah, that was, thanks Lilith for that tradition, that God. Fun tradition.
I thought debating a will nowadays was difficult.
I know, right?
This is like.
And to my demon children, I leave.
All my rags.
Oh, God.
Oh, nice.
I'm sorry. This is not a podcast for kids.
There's also a story where this one's interesting because it's like Lilith roams around trying to smell mother's milk, and then she knows there's a newborn that she can go strangle, which is her second thing after after watching dudes jack off. She's secondarily into strangling babies.
This is like an episode of Snap.
And there's one story where she goes to get this newborn, but the midwife traps her in a jar.
Not a bowl.
No, it's in a jar after she, because Lilith takes the form of a long black hair that falls in the mother's milk.
Uh-huh.
And the midwife picks up the hair. She knows what's up and puts it in a jar.
See, normally I would leave this hair, but I know this time.
And then she's like, she has the jar, so she's trapped Lilith. And she's like, I'll only let you out if you, you know, promise not to harm this household and, in fact, protect us from other evil demons for 3 years. I don't know why 3 years. It seems like.
No, that seems like you've got... fair. I mean, it seems like a good.
That's just like the
listen,
intuitive.
Like, sounded like she had her by the balls. Like, if I was going to be,
hard.
I would have been like, yeah, I want 8 centuries of protection.
That's
and
good.
Also, yeah, also no demon children. I don't want it. I don't want a single demon
that's
child.
Right. Yeah.
But so that's, it's interesting that when a man confronts Lilith, it's like, your life is ruined. People are going to die. Like, she's definitely going to have 7 million demon children with you. And then when a woman confronts Lilith, it's just like,
it's like
bam.
Girl talk.
Yeah. It's just like, gotcha. Let's deal with this. Done.
Come here, Lilith. Let me collect you.
Let's see. What else do I have here? So her main thing is like, A, seducing men, and mm-hmm. B, killing babies.
Right.
Which I think is very Freudian.
Like, yeah.
Absolutely. The fact that they would conjure a demon that did these very specific things is so indicative of a cultural problem with women.
Yeah, yeah. Like if you'd pitched this in the Buffy's writer's room, they would have been like, a little on the nose.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah.
Well, so that's the thing. Like, when you look at modern portrayals of Lilith, right, there's like the Lilith Fair and whatever, plenty of like Sabrina the Teenage Witch type of depictions.
There's an Israeli feminist magazine named Lilith.
Oh, I like that. The thing is, like, before doing this research, my question was kind of like, is that stuff just like kind of corny and appropriative? And does Lilith occupy actually a totally different like space in Jewish mythology? But really, she doesn't.
No, that's not a bit.
You know, it's like that actually is very appropriate use of Lilith.
Yeah, nobody's yoga-ing Lilith.
Right. she, you know, it's like when you have a character that seduces men and kills babies, that's indicative of like a very specific type of misogyny. Mm-hmm. That is,
you're like, oh wait, don't worry, she was a first wife and we know how they are. right
yeah
like that type of misogyny is still bizarrely prevalent, you know, like, and you still have conservative, you know, Christian pastors in America who are like, oh, feminists are all about, you know, having sex and killing babies,
right?
You know, like those like actual two things that
Lilith
did.
That is an actual
did.
Demon, right?
I mean, yeah. The whole like she's a temptress woman who will ruin you if you can't control yourself around her. It's like so embedded into the rape culture discussions today.
Totally.
Just like, well, look, she dressed like that. Now it's ruined your life, and all the consequences are you. And she shouldn't have been out there at the middle of the night.
It was
while
all
you were
her
drunk.
Fault. It's crazy that you like that you had to rape her,
right?
Yeah,
because of the circumstances that she created. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. And then it's like, and this ruined this man who in a moment. And couldn't control it. It is a very, very ugly portrait to paint of one of the only really like large depictions of female demons or like female evil.
Yeah.
And it's funny that this demon has been around for 2,500 years and like
and the like circumstances... we haven't made any progress.
Yeah, not at all. Not a bit.
The underlying issue is still there that created the demon in the first place.
And then I mean, her role as Adam's first wife actually seems kind of minor mm-hmm. in mythology, but that only adds to, you know, like she wanted to be equal. She said we were equal. Adam couldn't deal with that. He wanted to be dominant. So she fucked off and then he got a nice helpmeet that would, you know, serve him.
There's some theories that the version of the Lilith story in the alphabet, and in fact, most of that second half of the alphabet is satirical.
Right.
That is actually just poking fun at the Bible and that like, it's really kind of a joke on rabbis.
Wow, who would ever poke fun at the Bible?
How disrespectful.
Wow. I can't imagine.
But that is actually poking fun at rabbis who are talking about, oh, there's these two versions of Genesis, but you can square them this way. And that making up this story where Adam is like kind of a wuss, yeah. I guess, in the opinion of the author, that like his wife...
He can't even control his wife or whatever?
Something along those lines, which is, you know...
There's layers here. Wow.
Or specifically that God makes a deal with Lilith, like you said. Like, that seems very odd, right? That's not the Old Testament God that would, like, let it go and be like, okay, well, as long as we make a deal, you know, we're okay.
Like, Eve took God a bite of an apple and he was like, we're done here.
And
Lilith is birthing armies of demon children, refusing to come back and claiming superpowers for his own. And he's like,
in his name.
Listen,
she gained her superpowers by saying his name.
Yeah. And then he was like, let's get to the negotiating table. Okay,
he's like, okay,
so
well,
what
I just
want
this problem to go away.
Yeah.
You know?
Help me help you, Lilith.
So that it's kind of a blasphemous idea in the original text, and I wonder, it's so funny because so many later interpretations of Lilith are like based on that story, which was in and of itself a satire, which means the story probably resonates more with people than the author might have expected.
Yeah.
And satire is very tricky that way.
That's true. It can really get away from you.
I mean, it centers Adam as the main character where it's like, so you're saying they were equal. They were created to be equal. Everything was equal. Why are his actions, which are cowardly, was like, and honestly entitled to be like, well, I wanted her to listen to me. Well, then they weren't equal, because if you immediately are siding with one of your creations over the other one, it means that he was the default. And so the perpetuation of this story is like, even if you took it as satire, it's like, well, obviously he's the default. And it's sort of funny to me that there is literally no defense of like, okay, well, he was unable to fulfill her, so she needs a new husband. There was never even like an option that they would make Adam too.
That's true, because
Steve.
in all these myths where she seduces men, that like, It doesn't seem to be related to like, oh, well, Adam wasn't a good husband, therefore
right.
I need a new husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just...
It's like there's something wrong with her and she needs to devour men.
Yeah, just...
Well, it's
a woman being sexual is just evil, obviously, on its face.
Is it not like the classic Madonna horror thing where you have Eve
and
Lilith
as
the two wives of Adam?
Totally.
100%.
Not to get too 20th century feminism on everybody.
We're in the 21st century now.
I know, but
we're like fourth wave now.
Fair enough.
No, listen, thanks to Twitter, we're on like 58 waves. We're like
52nd wave.
And it's really embarrassing.
Waves are really problematic.
that's true.
Waves are canceled.
That's true.
So that's what I have. Do you have more stuff?
Well, actually, I wanted to mention the reason that I've always really liked Lilith as a character is not just because of the feminist, I'm not even going to call them undertones, the feminist overtones.
Yes.
The feminist tones. And it wasn't even that I connected like Lilith Fair and Lilith like that. I was a child when that was happening. And like that wasn't where my point of origin was. It was the stories about Lilith are always in pop culture are always like either she's a vampire like on True Blood. She's a witch demon like on Sabrina. You keep having these points of entry for that. And as a kid, especially as a queer kid, you identify so much heavier with the Disney villains than you do.
The Disney villains are extremely queer.
They're extremely queer. Like Jafar, Ursula is Divine, who is the background of my phone, and I love Divine.
Oh, nice.
I loved Ursula growing up, and I think you identify with them because they're misfits, and it makes you think outside of, like, in the majority of those stories, those villains are actual villains who do horrible things. But it's the impetus and the character. They're stronger characters because they have stronger motivations. They're driven by tangible things. They have results they want to get. Whereas princesses generally always have that like vague happiness and everything will be peaceful. And
princesses make decisions reactively, and villains are driven by like an inner conflict.
They're proactive.
Yeah, it's
to
proactive.
Change the world. Right?
There would be no story if Ursula wasn't like, well, I'm going to trick you.
Right.
So you have these characters like the White Witch in Chronicles of Narnia, where you end up in your mind, especially as a queer kid, a little bit arguing for them, and because you identify with them, trying to square that. Mm.
That's so interesting because like. Being raised extremely Christian, like I read the Chronicles of Narnia and I was like, the White Witch is evil. Like, oh, praise Aslan, you know?
Like, yeah. I just remember thinking like, well, someone's got to be in charge. And I've got all these superpowers. And I mean, like, yes, it's very cold. But in general, things weren't so bad. I mean, the worst thing that happens, you got turned to stone. Like, I know that now as an adult. I'm like, that doesn't make sense. But I remember being like, well, no one would be Ursula's friend. And like, this girl was entitled and came and wanted to get her magical powers. It's like, well, she charged you a cost. That's a business. Like, I felt, I don't know. And I think it's not rational and I can't defend it as much as I can say, like, as a child, if you don't see yourself represented as a hero, you only see yourself represented as a villain and you don't want to be a bad person, you end up squaring it. And the story of Lilith to me was the same thing, where it was like, I believe in equality and I believe she should have the right to have this life choice or perspective or control or power in general. And so you end
up... And to strangle babies.
And then you end up being like, well... Some babies look pretty strangleable.
I mean, look, if you're having 1,000 demon babies a day, what's 100?
Right? Yeah, yeah, I mean, like...
That's tithing, I mean, right? You're paying another, your 100 to God.
That's another 10 minutes. And like, we always have 10 minutes. You can squeeze it in. And so those characters always really resonated with me. It was like women who didn't obey rules, who wanted power, who wanted equality. People who, especially femmes, that didn't fit into traditional hero archetypes or villain archetypes, that weren't like big gray monsters of evil. Like the devil... the way that gets portrayed, the most interesting portrayal of the devil is as a femme trickster. The least interesting is like, I have horns or whatever, and like displays of fire. That's not interesting. And so I always found her very fascinating. And for example, there was a Britney Spears concept album that ended
up... For example.
In my day-to-day life, that's just a reference that comes up.
There's a Britney Spears concept album?
There's a Britney Spears concept album that she wanted to put together that she was going to call Lilith, and that it was the lead song. There's a demo called Sorry Adam, and it's about this woman.
Sorry moms.
she eats this apple and decides she's going to leave eating because she doesn't give a shit and she doesn't care for this dude. And she's like, sorry, but I ate this and like I like having sex. And this whole album was going to be built around this. And eventually her label stepped in, and this was like during that tumultuous time in her life that we all saw, 2007, post-2007. And they ended up calling the album Femme Fatale, but a lot of the themes are still really there. And when you think about it, you think about a figure of like Britney Spears, again, the Madonna whore thing is huge for the Britney Spears like iconography. The slave for you with the snake in the Garden of Eden.
Yes.
Like, it's a heavy theme for her, especially as a young woman who was seen as the pinnacle of beauty and talent and stuff. And
that was her in particular, like a lot of the marketing around her was like, she's a virgin.
She's a virgin. She is completely nude and covered in diamonds, but she's untouched.
She's a virgin. So she's like very sexual, but
I mean, her
it has immense power, you know?
Also very pure. Yeah. Like,
she was supposed to have every form of power. She had the virginity power and the sex power and the young power, but she seems older than her age power.
And we did something that ancient societies did, or supposedly did, which is sacrifice a virgin, because that's the most powerful thing you can do. And we sacrificed her on the altar of fame.
Yeah.
Wow.
We skewered this person. And we
don't
asked,
make fun of me, Lauren.
No, I think that this
no, it's true.
It is overt, and I do think it is sort of obvious. But what it gets to me is that it affected me so much, even though it was obvious, because I was young. And so I look at these stories of Lilith, and I'm like, wow, it's kind of deep, a little deep, that like Britney Spears was like, I'm like this biblical
figure.
I feel
this way, yeah.
And I think like, especially when I was younger, like if I was to do a concept album, it probably would have been called like, you know, Hades. Because he was sassy and he was like, I don't want them to get together. Like, and I get that feeling. And I think I've always found her in the Bible to be or not necessarily in the Bible, but in the religious canon to be in a unique figure. And the fact that she is even left out of the official version of events is even more me
That's
being
true,
like,
isn't it?
Like it's sort of like queer people in history. They just were like, you know, Abraham Lincoln had a crazy wife and they didn't sleep together. Like, they don't, the queerness of those stories and the evidence of that never gets put down in history.
Even though everybody's burying a bowl in their foundation.
Yeah,
right? Like, everyone
right.
knows about it. Yeah. But
exactly.
We're going to like...
Nobody talks about going to their bowl guy.
Like,
know?
Every historian knew that Richard the Lionhearted was sleeping with half of the army, but nobody's going to write it down in their book. And if you don't write it down, then it's not history and it's not a source you can cite, even though it's based on basically the same amount of evidence. And and someone being written out of that because they felt all of those feminist equality feelings, I don't know, like, it just hits me in a deep way. Hmm. So... I guess, long story short, too late, Stan Lilith.
I was afraid that Lilith was going to be super corny, but after doing my research, I also Stan Lilith.
Hmm. And that's the tea. We're going to wrap it up shortly, but I have one thing to bring to the table.
What's
here.
What's that?
Okay. This goes back to the Jewish Encyclopedia.
As all things do.
It's on the internet. And what do you do on the internet when you have a website or page?
Mm-hmm.
You allow comments.
Whoa.
Oh, no.
You have comments?
There are comments on all...
On the Jewish Encyclopedia?
On the Jewish Encyclopedia, 1906, unedited text.
Holy shit.
As it brags on the header of every page.
On a scale of, like...
Dude, these are some of the fucking craziest internet comments
on
I've ever
of
read.
AV Club say, to Salon.
Yeah, I was going to say, on a scale from like my grandmother posting recipes and then people asking follow-up questions to 4chan, where are we landing?
On a scale of like local newspaper to... Okay. These are crazy, okay?
Oh,
I'm ready.
I'm going to read a couple.
Oh my God.
These first two are from the Lilith page. The most fucked up thing, in my opinion, as a veteran internet user, mm-hmm. a proud veteran of the internet.
Stolen valor, but keep
Excuse
going.
Excuse me? I saw things. Okay.
I remember Napster.
These are all Facebook-enabled comments, which means real names,
oh,
people.
No!
Real names. This user wrote on the Lilith one, strange but true. Demons are real, and if you have sex with a wit or warlock unknowingly, you will be attacked by these sex demons because witches and warlock does astral projection.
That checks out.
You know what? I'm glad that someone finally said something.
A user named Carol also said, I just recently read After Lilith, after naming a baby goat after the Lilith of Fraser fame. Do you suppose that Fraser's domineering wife could have taken that name for a reason?
Fraser being Fraser?
Fraser.
It's
spelled wrong.
I don't super remember Fraser. He had a wife named Lilith?
He had an ex-wife named Lilith who had strong opinions.
Oh.
And if you look at the Wikipedia page for Lilith under pop culture, she and a few other people are listed. And then in parentheses, they go, is this related? Like, Wikipedia itself does not know.
Anyway, that came to mind after the person, after naming a baby goat after the Lilith of Fraser fame.
Oh, so they named their baby goat after
Lilith.
The sitcom character.
And then thought, is this a demon? And then
that's
thought,
like full circle, you know, because
no, it's true.
Because then you have the scapegoat.
I named my
right?
baby goat Adolf after a fun character from a children's story, and then I thought, who are the other famous Adolfs?
Let me Google my goat and see if anybody else took this name. Finally, this is from Fall of Satan, our last episode.
Okay.
There was one comment on here that I collected, but we didn't talk about.
I'm ready for it.
I am in California. I am a targeted individual and gang stalked. I do not remember any of the past, but the Christians are killing me piece by piece with military-grade electromagnetic weapons.
Whoa.
I would watch this series.
First of all,
straight
this
to
is,
green light.
I think, a Philip K. Dick story.
Yeah.
Because he talked a lot about, you know, his theory
yeah,
that
yeah.
the timeline stopped in 77 AD and that the Romans were still in charge and he was an early Christian that had been sent forward into the future and that he received...
That all also checks out.
Divine invasion, oh, flooding his mind with the truth of the Gnostic religion, which was the actual only true Christianity. Anyway, Nathan Lembo is keyed in because he's being killed by high military grade electromagnetic weapons.
Poor Nathan.
Yeah. Nathan, call your dad.
Yeah.
I have some comments here, too. If you look up any documentary with Lilith, they use a few very beautiful paintings.
Okay.
And they use them over and over because there's not a ton of iconography.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I saw, what's his name? Rossetti, Dante Gabriel Rossetti.
Yeah, that's
has,
a good one.
Has a stunning. Famous Lilith.
Yeah.
They're all stunning. Which you would know if you scrolled onto the comments where every single comment is, she's hot. She's hot. She's hot. We're discussing like Babylonian texts, Sumerian writings, the etymology of the angels' names. And
it says, Lilith, best waifu.
And, yeah, at the bottom it says, like, boobs.
That's like...
And you know what? If that doesn't tell you why the right. Lilith story that, like, exists...
That proves why the Lilith story exists. Like, that's it.
God, I
that's
love...
That's great. That's
I love
perfect.
The internet for just being so obvious.
And obviously, this is the end of the program.
Obviously.
Ryan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You've been
me.
An absolute delight. Where can people find you online if
stuff
that's
you
what you
plug.
Want?
If you wanted to find me, I mean, it definitely, I'll be...
It doesn't matter what they want. It matters what you want.
I want you to find me. I will be in a tiny bowl buried beneath your home.
Okay.
Also at Ryan Houlihan on Twitter and Instagram, spelled like the restaurant chain. You can find my podcast, it's called Tomorrow. It's from a website called The Outline. And on there, we talk about how the media talks about itself, which is a lot more fun than it sounds.
It's great.
It's a fun time.
You can find us on Twitter at SunSchoolDrop. And you can also send us email to contact@SundaySchoolDropouts.lol.
That's .lol, not .com.
You can follow Lauren online on the Twitter
machine
thing. At Lauren E. O'Neill. O'Neill spelled like Shaquille does it.
That's true. And Niko Bakulich is Nico's Twitter handle, NikoBakulich.
Thank you to Elise Carlton for our logo and art, as always.
And of course, thank you to Niko for editing and engineering all this shiz.
We will be back in 2 weeks. Thank you to all those loyal droppers out there sunning the school from day till night.
Yeah, cool. We'll see you on Sunday.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.